Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Jim Miles with the Purdue Party Line. Today, our guest, Dr. R.B. Stewart, Vice President and Treasurer of Purdue University. If you'll remember, R.B. was with us here about a month ago, and we answered a good many questions, but a good many, of course, were unanswered, unasked. We just didn't have time. And so he graciously consented to come back again today, and I might say, R.B., that I caught all sorts of the dickens from your secretary for dragging you back down here today. He said she was trying to get you away for a little vacation and that it just didn't make too Jim, many people.
Jim, a little vacation with me is any time I can get 2 hours without the telephone ringing.
I know what you mean. Well, speaking of telephones, we have one here, and its phone number is 31027. 31027. And if you have questions that you'd like to ask Dr. Stewart, by all means, call us, and we'll interrupt our conversation any time. We tried to do some things last time that didn't interrupt very well, so we hope that we've gotten it broken down into small enough areas today that we can get our questions answered and still take care of the telephone without any trouble. And I think we'll start out today, RB, if we may, with one that we just didn't get to last month, although you were more than prepared to answer it. And that's the question of just what does the fact that Purdue University happens to be located in West Lafayette and Tippecanoe County mean to the community in terms of dollar support and business and cultural and the rest of the things?
Well, Jim, that's always a very good question. I'm going to answer it perhaps in three parts, shall I say. Most people understand problems of this sort when you convert them into terms of dollars and money. So I'll mention that and then the cultural advantages and the scientific advantages and the impact we have in Greater Lafayette. In the first place, last fiscal year, the university spent for salaries and wages almost $20 million, to be exact, $19,680,000. For the regular budgeted operation of the university. Now, this is for salaries and wages that went to the pockets of people who live here, and from their pockets it went into banks, grocery stores, clothing stores, savings accounts, homes, and property. And when you put $20 million of current money into a community of 55,000 people, this is quite a little piece of change.
Yes, it is.
Now, in addition to those salaries, we spent $24 million on our construction program last year, and about 60% of that is supposed to be salaries and wages. So there's an additional $18 million that was spent in this community to pay workmen and provide funds. Now, in addition to those two items, which together mean some $35 million, we spent $10 million for supplies, and $500,000 of that was for groceries for our students in the dormitories in the union, and much of that was local for vegetables and beef. We had 13,000 students, and while I might say about half of them live in the dormitories and residence halls, and therefore the money they pay is included in the university expenditure I mentioned, perhaps about 6,000 or 7,000 students that spend $1,000 to $1,500 a year for their own expenses in the school outside of tuition. That's another $6 to $7.5 million.
This is board and room.
Board and room and amusements and gasoline and
clothes
and
so
things
forth.
Of that sort. So when you sum those up, we undoubtedly pour into this community at the present time about $50 million of cash each year. Now, that is a sizable sum of money. It isn't any wonder that the people here say they're the biggest bank between Indianapolis and Chicago is in Lafayette. Now, that, of course, keeps this city prosperous. And this city in the Depression was looked upon as one of the favored cities of the state, and it was because of the stability of the university. Now, in the next 5 years, this enrollment of 13,000 students is going to increase. We think in the next 5 years it's going up to 18,000 to 20,000 students. And this means that the figures I've just mentioned will increase another third. And this means more homes, more staff, more groceries, more clothes, more amusements, more everything for Lafayette. And the children are born, they're coming. There isn't any question about the urge now in the American people, particularly in our territory, demanding the opportunity for an education. Lafayette is fortunate economically. The second thing, no city of our size, even greater Lafayette with 70 or 80,000 people in the county, could afford the cultural experiences and the recreational experiences provided by the university and the perfectly terrific programs that we put in our Hall of Music.
Mm-hmm.
And we think even reasonably good football games in the stadium and basketball games, the playing fields and the recreation that go along. The result is that Lafayette is not just an industrial city, it's a cultural center. And it is that because Purdue University is here. And no matter how culturally minded a population of 80,000 would be, you wouldn't have a program such as the university brings from the Metropolitan Opera and the London Philharmonic and Bob Hope and what's the other boy, Duke Ellington,
yeah,
and so on.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have those things. Then, of course, the actual scientific and intellectual relationships, which are reflected in better school systems and whenever people want something, they have a bulb or something that doesn't hatch at the right time, they telephone and get the answer and know what spray to use. The application of the scientific and learned brain power within the community. Now, those three areas. In addition, our cooperation government-wise, we have funds to invest, endowment funds that have been given to us and that we've accumulated, for example, in a research foundation. So we can invest those to help the city schools, and we have cooperated with both West Lafayette and the Klondike School in securing for them very favorable interest rates and reducing the cost of their facilities.
True.
We gave the city of West Lafayette, with no strings attached, a 40-acre natural park, the most beautiful spot for youngsters that any city our size could possibly have, and which they probably never could have acquired except through our operations. We help with the police and fire and things of that sort, and while it is true that these activities are carried on because they help the university, also they do provide that much added safety for the citizens that we wouldn't otherwise have. Well, I think that's a reasonable summary and a very quick one.
Yeah. It all the way through, it is repeated both at the top administration level and as a university policy and at the individual level of this integration. I guess the old phrase used to be town and gown. No, certainly is not.
Yes.
But nevertheless, I'm reminded that our Lafayette Lions Club, of which I'm a member, that roughly 50% of the club are are university people. And this interrelationship, the interplay, the serving on committees with these people is a very healthy experience. But it is a total integration between the university and the community. And the community helps the university. The university helps the community.
This is right. And we who are working in the administration and with the trustees firmly believe that our best development will take place in a community which is attractive to the best type of men, the best type of staff that we can get.
Mm-hmm.
This, in turn, improves the quality of the staff we have for the students. As we improve those, we should get better students. It's one of these ring around a rosy thing, and the interplay is complete. And we firmly believe that we want a good community, a fine community, and a progressive community, and we must cooperate to have it. And then we get the cooperation back, and I'm very happy with the cooperation that all the public bodies give us. Our city councils, our mayors, our county commissioners, my relationships with them and the economic aspects of the university have always been very cordial, and they've been very helpful at times.
You mentioned the Purdue Research Foundation, and I know that you get asked a good many times, just what is this body called the Purdue Research Foundation? Why was it formed, and what does it do with what money it has?
Well, the Research Foundation is a corporation that was organized by two of Indiana's most illustrious citizens, Mr. David Ross and Mr. J.K. Lilly, way back in 1929. And they provided the Research Foundation with some endowment. The endowment is money which we can invest, and then the income is available for our use. This corporation was chartered to secure funds and administer trusts and do things which would be helpful to the university. And being a private corporation, in the sense that it is not supported by public funds, but entirely by private funds, it can operate as a private corporation in many areas. We do not have the restrictions of the investment of funds, for example, that the public corporation known as the university has. We can buy and sell land, we can hold land, we can do things of this sort. The fundamental purpose of it is to accumulate funds which, when invested, will provide an income which, in turn, is used to develop research in the university. And while I don't have the figures in front of me, I can give you some indication of the significance of this. The foundation itself, from the interest on invested funds, turns over between $200,000 and $300,000 a year to the university to support research for the graduate school. This means that the graduate school of Purdue University is enhanced by having $300,000 for equipment and scholarships and supplies and things of that sort, which, if we were to have a graduate school, otherwise would have to be provided some way by the state. So this is an extremely important thing. The Research Foundation cooperates with industry in securing grants and gifts and makes contracts to do things which our graduate school, our students, can use for their research work. All told, we channel into the university some $2 million a year for research work in our laboratories. And while some of this has to do with, shall I say, defense, we have the rocket laboratory out at the airport, where we're working on fuels and things for guided missiles and all of that. This $2 million is not an insignificant amount, and all of our projects are used as vehicles to train PhD students, shall I say. So we have here a tremendous working unit to do these things. Now, we can, in the investment of funds, in order to avoid being entangled with state regulations regarding property, do things such as was announced in the press, the last of our ventures, the acquisition of the land and the establishment of a marketing center out here for the graduate students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, we could have done that on university property. We then would have always had a conflict in the community, because others would want to come in, perhaps, and patronize that store once in a while. Well, we shouldn't be using public money in that sense. So the foundation can invest in the property and lease it to private people. And so it's no different than if we bought stock in General Motors or bought bonds of the Inland Steel Company and so forth. We invested in some land and lease it to private operators. It pays all the taxes, supports the community. And as a school board member now, Jim, this will help you with the problem of paying teachers out in Klondike, I hope, in a year or two, because this will add taxable property to the township.
In other words, the properties owned by the foundation are taxable?
Those which we use in the normal channels of trade. This is the thing that's important. Everybody thinks that because it's the Research Foundation related to Purdue, when we acquire a piece of property, we pay no taxes. Mm-hmm. This is not true. If the property is acquired and is used for students, or directly for the university. Then we take it off the tax roll because that's a public policy, and the legislature has declared that all such property should be tax exempt.
Yeah.
But in this case where we're going to let somebody run a grocery store and a drug store to serve the students and the public, they will pay the same taxes that they pay in the village or anywhere else. Our housing project down at Parkside, for example, which we built, to protect the park entrance, shall I say, to keep the community nice, but also to provide housing for our faculty. That's fully taxable. Now, because the foundation is exempt under the federal income tax, for federal income taxes, we don't pay federal income taxes, but we do pay all the property taxes and so forth on that part of our operation.
Those are the ones that stay at home and, as support the school.
Whenever we invest money as an investment per se, that is only for investment to earn an income, then we pay taxes. But if we invest to get some property or a facility to house students or to help expand the campus or to get something that the university otherwise has no money for, then that is tax-exempt because it is directly for the enhancement of the university. And that's a good thing for our citizens to understand. We file each year with the county auditor a report on all these holdings, so the county officials can check it, and it's a matter of public record. And we're probably the biggest taxpayers in West Lafayette.
This research foundation sort of helps complete the circle. Certainly you cannot have a large university today without having an adequate research program which attracts graduate students, which in turn supplies the a good deal of the, what shall I say, the instructional staff or the at least the graduate assistant staff.
That's
and
right.
The teaching effort. The whole thing sort of, again, goes around in a circle.
Yes. The university does research. It seeks new knowledge. It teaches and does extension work. And these things all intertwine. The real source of wealth in this country, as we keep talking in higher education, has to come out of new ideas. We've got our country all explored. True, we do find occasional new oil well, but we know pretty well where our resources are. So when somebody now strikes a new source of wealth, it's out of the head of somebody, some brain power. And the brain power that puts these things together is something more than just ordinary level, and that comes out of the graduate school, and the PhDs. And these PhDs, in turn, motivate the faculty. And this is how you build a university. You can't build a strong university in a week or a month or a year or a decade. This takes a long span of time. A lifetime of people. And without the research foundation supplying money to support the research, we would probably have a much smaller graduate school in the first place. That is, fewer graduate students. If we had a graduate school two-thirds of the size we have now, we'd have to hire about 200 more full-time instructors to do what the graduate students do in their part-time teaching. Well, a full-time instructor costs much more than two half-time assistants who are at the graduate level. But much of the work that's done in the elementary level can be done by these people who are way above the subject matter they're teaching, but still not the finished product of the graduate school.
And working always under the direction of a senior staff
member,
shall we say.
That's right. And particularly in laboratories like chemistry where we have thousands of students taking freshman chemistry. We have the largest freshman chemistry class of any school in America, I'm told. Something over 2,000 students in that course. Well, much of the work in the laboratories, the doing of experiments, can be done just as well under the supervision of a graduate student as an old scientist who's has an international reputation and so forth.
So we conserve manpower, really.
Conserve manpower, and this helps us, of course, meet the teaching load, and we do it at less cost per student.
Plus, sort of fattening, as we might say, our own instructional staff in years to come. These people
this
need that
right.
experience
sure.
in the teaching.
Because this is the source. No industrial laboratory trains a new scientist.
true.
They make use of the scientists we train. Mm-hmm. So the university graduate school and our scientific laboratories, here is the future of America, not only at Purdue, but any of the University of America. The future of America is written in the graduate schools of higher education in America. It's a solemn thought. But
yes, it is.
It's worth contemplating.
One we'll remember. Well, we should say that our guest today is Dr. R.B. Stewart, the Vice President and Treasurer of the University. Our phone number is 31027, and we'd be most happy if you'd like to give us a call and ask Dr. Stewart any questions. This is Purdue Party Line from WBAA, the voice of Purdue in West Lafayette, Indiana. Now, R.B., we talked earlier about the new shopping center out west of town. And if it's all right with you, in the time we have left here, if we're not interrupted by the phone, and we welcome those interruptions, I'd like to sort of be geographical and come in west of town and have you tell me a little bit about the various things out there. Let's see. There are still some of the, I've always called the barracks apartments left, are there not?
That's right. We call them that because they're old Army barracks, which were converted and partitioned off into apartments for the GI students after the war. Mm-hmm. We have one group of those west of what we call the Airport Road. They will be operated this coming year, but in the fall of 58, we expect all of those will be torn out and demolished. Mm-hmm. They have reached the point of diminishing returns. Yeah. While we don't charge very high rents there because they're old and furnished by the government for GIs, they've served their purpose and they cost more to take care of and keep from leaking now than, than the savings otherwise. Mm-hmm. We will finish then the new permanent type apartments that are being built between the university and the airport, mm-hmm. east of the Airport Road. We'll finish all those and have them occupied in the spring of 58.
I understand there are 900 units in
908.
There? 908.
600 of them will be one bedroom, and 308 will be two bedroom. Mm-hmm. Many of them, 468, will be occupied this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things in that relationship, something that's unique in this country, first place, this is the biggest married student undergraduate community in the country. But we've built in the center of this project a little nursery school for mm-hmm. the preschool children, a true nursery school, which will be run by the parents in the community, what we call the Associated Parents Nursery School. And the mothers will be the teachers and so forth. Then over on the corner of the project, near the campus, we are building, partly at the expense of this project, a building which will house the Department of Family Life and Child Development, which has been located over in the old Home Economics Building. And in that department, we train the professional nursery school teachers to go out in the state and in society. So right in the community, we will have this department, and they will run a nursery school to train the teachers. Mm-hmm. So the parents can come over and observe mm-hmm. how the university runs a nursery school as a model. Mm-hmm. Then they can go back to their own and apply what they mm-hmm. see. This, I think, is one of the most fascinating educational accidents growing out of a housing project to be found anywhere.
Well, the community out there ought to be fairly well self-sufficient with this.
It is.
Of course, there'll be no schools, but I imagine there'll be very few.
But they all pay taxes. They pay a surcharge of $1, $1.50 a month. Everybody, whether they have children or not, pay this surcharge.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that surcharge, we pay the transfer tuition for the children to come in and use the West Lafayette school.
Right.
And we have a contract with the city of West Lafayette. Mm-hmm. Now, to get the West Lafayette schools to do this, mm-hmm. we built four or five rooms up at the Birchfield School mm-hmm. with no interest cost to the city at all.
I get it.
Uh-huh. And then we pay transfer tuition, which mm-hmm. the students in turn pay. So this community, they're really learning to be citizens. They're having to pay school taxes, you see. Mm-hmm. They don't pay property taxes because as students in the university, they're exempt. But they do pay school taxes through us.
Mm-hmm.
They establish their own council and will set their own traffic regulations in the area. And believe me, this is where young people who are called speed demons and so forth learn what traffic speed means and the hazard to children.
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, have designed our roads there so there's no through highway leading from the airport to campus. Nobody would take a shortcut there for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But these students are getting some wonderful experience in electing their council and conducting their civic affairs within the limits of the established civil laws, of course, of the community.
Have we lost or gained housing units by the removal of the barracks apartments and the what I used to call the black and whites, I guess?
Well, we're gaining some 400. With all of our apartment construction the last couple of years, we will have gained approximately 500 housing units.
Mm-hmm.
We had about 500, that's my recollection, 500
mm-hmm.
plus.
Mm-hmm.
With the brick apartments up by the stadium, about 700.
Mm-hmm.
And now we will have roughly 1,200 apartments and accommodations for students.
Mm-hmm.
We're the biggest landlords also in the community.
Yeah, I can see. Well, this again almost goes right back around the circle here and would tie us back into this research foundation and the ongoing research program.
Well,
but I suppose in order to get good students to work on their doctorates in the research program, you've got to provide some place for them to live.
This is right. Just as we built Parkside to rent to faculty.
Sure.
Because, you see, we're not socializing the faculty. We don't provide these on a subsidy basis. They have to pay rents to pay the taxes. They have to pay interest on the money invested, because if we didn't get the interest, then we'd be buying General Motors bonds or something.
Sure.
So this is an investment proposition. And we amortize the cost of the houses over their lifetime, just the same as private enterprise does. This is private enterprise. It pays the taxes of private enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But by having these facilities, which we hold for faculty, when a new man comes in, even a new department head, he doesn't want to buy a house right off the bat. And there aren't too many available for rent.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to rent for a year. Then he finds out what part of town and makes his deal and gets his house. Within a year or two, he's housed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, instructors and the young people who come to the staff may not afford to buy houses or build them, but neither are they assured of what we call tenure. They may be here only a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a number of people on our staff who come for a year, professors from other schools. Just as ours go on leave of absence, they get a leave of absence from other schools and come here. So by having nice quarters, not elaborate, but comfortable and pleasant,
mm-hmm.
we attract people that otherwise would go elsewhere. And frequently the difference between an outstanding professor coming to Purdue or going somewhere else is that whether or not he likes to live here
mm-hmm.
as compared to whether he likes to live at somewhere else.
This is very important
in getting new people.
Yeah. Let's move on in. To the single students, if I can for a moment. X, of course, is completed. So are the State Street courts, and so are the Gables courts. And H1, as I understand, will be occupied this fall.
H1 will be occupied next month. It's
mm-hmm.
now finished, and they're dusting up and fixing the little doodads here and there that need fixing.
You'll be interested to know in this regard, Darby, that they already have their plans firmly completed for what we call a wired wireless radio station within H1. The officers are already elected
in other
and
words,
ready to go.
The students are organized,
yes,
whether we are or not.
Yes, sir.
Well, of course, the genius of our students in doing these things amazes me. What do we have on the campus, 3 or 4 radio stations now?
Well, we've got Cary Club, we've got X in the X dorms, we've got one organized in State Street and one organized in Gables. And there's provisions for one in H1, 2, and 3.
So we're going to have 5 or 6. Well,
all
Jim,
tied together Jim, in a Purdue radio network.
WBAA better be watching its program.
Well, of course, we use this as our training ground, you know, RV. Oh. We draw our best actors and our best announcers from these staffs, and they enjoy coming over here and working. So,
how many students, let me put this program on the other foot, many students get into radio and acting and things through WBAA?
Normally about 150 per semester work here within these confines. About 80 are actively working on the staff of the Cary Club radio station, and about 50, as my memory serves me correctly, on WRX. Those are both boys and girls over there because they serve the women's residence halls.
and the Gables and the State Street courts have not completed their organization, but they still have 20 or 25 on their staff. And then in addition, we're using about 60 students as camera operators and pushers over in the TV unit.
So, well, in other words, in spite of the fact this is a public service to the citizens of the state and you're not teaching classes through WBAA as far as our students are concerned, lo and behold, you've got a half million or 500 students involved in you.
That's right.
You're a pretty good teacher after all, Jim.
Purdue Party Line. Yes. Wait just a moment. You'd like to ask this question of Dr. Stewart, I'm sure. Let me put him on the telephone.
Hello.
Dr. Stewart, this is we're representing more or less a group of graduate students. We were wondering that since the graduate student is more or less the crux of the balance between the student and the faculty at Purdue, how come they were extended very few student or staff privileges?
In what way?
Well, in the way of... like we were required, say, just a minor point to pay staff fees in the golf course and in the music hall, but very few graduate students are extended the privilege of a student passport unless they're a free grant fellow or something.
Well,
like
that. Do you pay the fee then that the undergraduates pay? You see, you ask a favor by not being required to pay the convocation fee or the athletic fee, the athletic facilities fee, which support those enterprises. And then, since you don't want to assume those responsibilities community-wide, individually, you're counted then as staff, and you get the benefits of staff privilege, which is much lower than any public people would have if the person outside the university paid. So it seems to me that the graduate students are being given good consideration. You're not supposed to, according to the program that you have carried on with research, you don't have to, you don't have time to take in all these things. So we exempt you from your special fees, which the undergraduates all pay to support them. Then when you use them individually, of course, you have to pay the faculty fee, which is less than the, shall I say, the outsider's fee, but maybe more on a per unit basis than the undergraduate. So you see, you are given consideration in that.
Well, we were thinking also of things like, although there's a parking problem that exists, see, the graduate student has refused the staff privilege of being able to park on campus and things like this. Of course, this is a sore point all the time.
All students are refused privilege to park on campus except under certain special provisions. And my guess is with the increasing number of cars and the decreasing space for parking that... a lot of faculty can't park on the campus, too.
Whether they've got the privilege to or not.
President and I were talking about that after lunch, about the use of parking. And I said, Mr. President, no matter what you do, you can't provide enough parking for all the people who want to park at the peak load. That's an impossible question. There's a committee studying it. They've been studying it for a year or two. And I don't know the answer. Part of the answer is tell the undergraduates to leave their cars at home. Now, we've stopped the freshmen, we've stopped the sophomores. I suppose we'll work up to the juniors and the seniors. But then when they become married students, and the graduate students are mostly married, I think, why, I don't see how we can keep their cars out. But that's a... That's a puzzler. You tell me that answer. How do you park 10 cars in two spaces?
Well, it wouldn't be very easy. No. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stone.
Okay, fine.
It's a real good question. I'm reminded of the situation at the University of Minnesota, RB, where they actually rent space in the basement of some of those buildings up there, don't they? In other words, you cannot park anywhere on campus unless you buy a space to park.
There are many schools now that are charging even the faculty parking charges, and between you and me, and this is no secret as far as I'm concerned, in 5 years more, I think they will be charged for any parking on the Purdue campus. because we will have to spend so much money maintaining definite parking spaces and policing them that we'll do just what the University of Washington, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and all the others do. We'll either put in parking meters or we will give people a restricted parking space for a fee, and then we won't let anybody else park in it.
Do I understand correctly that at the down at Bloomington, at Indiana University, that they have they're actually renting the parking space in, on the streets in front of the houses? Did I?
Well, I always plead ignorance when you ask questions about what's being done at Bloomington or IU. I have hard enough time keeping up with what it is here at Purdue. But I did read in the paper that property owners may pay the city a fee for a restricted parking space in front of their house. And that is the way that's done. And I know householders adjacent to the campus who would be happy to pay such a fee if we would keep a space for their car.
I'm certain they would. Okay. Well, let's talk about this new co-educational gym. I know that that, together with the new Hall of Music Memorial Union Annex, have been two real fond dreams of yours. Well, let's talk the gym first. I know that it's about ready for occupancy, too.
Yes, we served notice on the contractor. We'd move in this week, and we are. He hasn't finished all the details, but we have to begin taking over. And that is a dream. It's the first such enterprise that, so far as I know, any school has built. It is for recreation, as differentiated from physical education or athletics, with team sports that are competitive or that are instructional classes. I suppose over the years there will be some instructional classes in physical education scheduled at hours when the students don't find it otherwise useful. But it is designed to provide all kinds of recreational activity, beginning with the indoor and the outdoor swimming pools where boys and girls can swim. They're under adequate and proper supervision. Badminton, volleyball, shooting galleries, archery, all of this sort of sports. And that came up because in thinking over our real problem, the difficulty of young men and young women finding a place where they can go out and have wholesome recreation in the proper environment. For example, where can in the summertime or the spring or fall, where can a couple go to go swimming? They want to go swimming. They can go over to the park in the city of Lafayette where there are 7,000 youngsters from 5 years old to 15. There's no place for an adult. And our other pools, they're restricted for teaching people to swim and taking required work. And there's a pool for girls and a pool for boys. And we have lived to the idea that never the twain shall meet. Well, we decided to apply the theory that the men and women live together in the world, and they should have places they can go and play that way. I joked in the outset because they slipped one over on me. I didn't know we had a shooting gallery in there for live ammunition. And I jokingly made a speech that said we have everything in there for boys and girls together, but since we have so many married students, we left out a shooting gallery. And, of course, the crowd got a big kick out of it, and then I went back to my office, and my good assistant said, but, R.B., we have got a shooting gallery. So now I'm going to watch and see whether we have any bad reaction.
Now, squash and handball and a roller skating rink, I understand, and several basketball courts.
This is right. And, of course, basketball goes with volleyball. So you can have anything from a small group of three or four or five people on up to almost any number, and or as few as one or two. You can go over alone. I expect to renew my youth by going over and doing some swimming. I've been wanting to swim, and there's no place around here to go swimming. I have to go to Florida or Hawaii to go swimming.
Sounds wonderful. Sounds wonderful. Now, I know I've only got 10 minutes left, and this is not, it's not possible to talk about the new annex, and it's a shame to call it an annex. I hope we have a name for it one of these days. in 10 minutes, but I would like for you to start at least to tell us some of the things that are going into this new structure, which I guess is the corner of that Marsteller? Yeah, Marsteller and State.
Yes, that'll be Marsteller and State, the main entrance next to the Union. Well, that is, of course, another baby of mine, the original idea for something of that sort, to extend the usefulness of the Union to adult education and to different types of activities of the undergraduates and the graduate students. I wrote my first memorandum to President Eliot suggesting that we might think about such a project in 1939. It was not until 1954, after the war had been fought and we had a new president and a lot of other developments, did the idea finally fall into focus so that it could be financed. Now, in connection with the recreational gymnasium and the Memorial Union Hall of Music Annex, these are being built entirely with private funds. There's no state tax money involved in the construction. In the annex building, one of the great things is the fact that between the Hall of Music Annex, which is the new Loeb Playhouse, and the Union Annex, which is for adult education and conference as well as students, and in which the new Fowler Hall will be, between these two units is the new library section. And so the state actually is getting a library facility, which otherwise would cost the taxpayer about $3.5 million. But if we built the Loeb Playhouse and the Union Annex as we had planned, we would have had two-thirds of the library section built anyway, because all the basement excavation and the walls would be there. So by roofing it over and putting in the floors and finishing it, we did the whole thing. We did it with the approval of the State Budget Committee and the Legislative Committee on Tax Study, so that it was very well considered before we went ahead. In it, of course, we have an experimental theater for the students, where we can either use a stage or have theater in around where the actors are in the middle and people sit around. And there's an audience section for 130, so it's adequate for a big class and demonstration. And above that is the Loeb Playhouse, which has 1,050 seats for legitimate plays, both by students and road shows and things that are important in our program, but do not anywhere near fill the Hall of Music, and we will put them on in the Loeb Playhouse. The stage in the Loeb Playhouse is deeper than the stage in the Hall of Music. The proscenium is not so wide. But back of the stage is a workshop that's the same size as the stage, so there are many more theatrical facilities in the Loeb Playhouse than in the Hall of Music. We call it the Hall of Music Annex and the Union Annex because the income from the Hall of Music, which was built with a student fee and a bond issue, and the income from the Union, which is also built with student fees and bond issues, could be used to support this. And this has been passed by all the attorneys and is strictly legal, but done without the cost to the taxpayer. The library and the theaters are, of course, tremendously important. But on the adult education side, we have a facility for conferences. And these conferences run anywhere from a 1 or 2 day session to 2 and 3 weeks. And different groups come in with different problems and different studies and use our faculty and staff and meet. This is no longer one of the least important. This is a very important project to the university. And we reach in this way upwards of 150,000 people a year who in effect come in for a special short course for one thing or another. You'll remember that just last week we had between 400 and 500 people here who are the marriage counselors from all the states in the Union come in. They have their association. And for 4 days, they had lectures and demonstrations and a review of problems and methods of handling the current sociological problems apparently involved with the problems of marriage. Well, this is something of tremendous significance. You'll remember the International Agricultural Conference we had, where a la the United Nations, we had the speeches being interpreted in three languages. There will be special facilities for doing that in this new unit. And in connection with those conferences, we have provided a vast exhibit room. Then, of course, for the students, we've got many activity rooms and two small ballrooms. They're really not ballrooms, but they're built like ballrooms with wood floors and things, because we have a great need for smaller student groups who want parties, fraternities, sororities, cooperative groups, international groups, to have social affairs where they're dancing.
Not big enough to use the big
ballrooms. And they're not big enough to use the big ballrooms in the union, and there's terrific overhead with that. So we have two of those so that we can cater to another social need of the student. Whenever you get the student body growing up into numbers of 15, 20, and they say by another 12 years, 25,000, we have a tremendous social problem unless we provide facilities that those students can, shall I say, play, have their recreation, and so forth. And if we don't provide a wholesome set of surroundings so that doing the thing that we stand for socially and intellectually, setting high standards of decency and other things in student conduct, we're going to have some problems. So we're just anticipating a little bit. We're doing it without cost to the taxpayer. This is far more serious with me. You called it my baby. It's a serious and a lifetime program, really, that is coming now into play and will be finished in 58.
Well, I think there's one other part of this, too, that I, of course, have been particularly interested in. That's this idea when people graduate from a university or a college, they're really just beginning their education, and they need to renew it formally from time to time.
That's right.
These conferences are vital to the society as we know it today.
Oh, yeah, and more important, you see, as the problems increase, and these things are the forerunners of organized instruction to develop later during the period when we're gathering information and experiences and exchanging them. Then they will later become well-defined short courses in instruction, and then they can be duplicated elsewhere because there will be a body of instructional material and knowledge to use. This is a great core of activity which people say, what does it cost per student to run the university? If you take my figure here of $20 million for salaries and wages, well, all of that's in there, but much of it, you see, is from the people who benefit from it. Out of the 19 million, there are probably not over 8 or 9 million that came from the state taxpayer.
I have one final question. I know there are many more I'd like to ask, but I talked to one of the men in the physical plant the other day, and he had a little job that we were going to do together, and I said, when are we going to get to it? And he said, well, I don't know. I've got everything all torn up, and I'm not real sure that I'm going to get it all put back together again. I just wonder, do you think we're going to get State Street put back together before 13,000 students descend upon us here in a couple, 3 weeks?
The only thing that's holding up State Street is the difficulty the public service company have had of removing the power lines. It's not anything that we have any control over, but it is coming, and the contracts are let, and the contractor is going to put the top surface on for the State Highway Department is the same fellow who's doing the rest of it. And he's a pretty good friend of ours, and he works awfully closely with us. And Mr. Drysdale of Forbes personally assured me that all the blacktop would be on and the highways would be open next week.
I noticed that they had the signs up today indicating that if it hadn't rained this morning, I suppose they were ready to put some blacktop on.
They are. They swept them, and now last night the Lord washed them, and they surely ought to be a good job.
Ready to go.
But I took the two-hour tour with the president today to let him see how things were coming along. He's been away on business and other reasons outside of town. So when he came back, I said, I just hope the trustees can find their way around the coming October. But we're going to be ready. I think it'll all be shaken into place, and I hope everybody will be agreeably surprised. Some little details, of course, there'll be things to finish indefinitely. We'll always be working on the campus.
Sure, sure.
But I have made this statement that our present program shapes up in 58. And in 58, the new life science, the new residence halls, the new married student courts, the new landscaping, the Hall of Music, it'll all be in operation. Our enrollment should approach 15,000 by 58-59.
Mm-hmm.
And what we now have should take care of 15,000 about as well as the campus took care of 7,000 before the war.
Thank you, R.B., for being so gracious to answer all of our questions. I know that you work closely with these things all the time. I also know that you're most interested in having others understand and know why and how certain things are done, and this has helped me, and I hope it's helped some of our listeners today. Our guest, Dr. R.B. Stewart, the Vice President and Treasurer of Purdue University. And that's all of Purdue Party Line today. Johnny DeCamp will be with you tomorrow. Hope that you'll join him then. Till then, Jim Miles says a pleasant good afternoon, everyone.